You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey everyone, welcome to Page to Stage,
a conversation with theater makers.
We're your hosts.
That's Brian.
And that's Mary.
This episode is part of our series on Six the Musical. In this series, we uncover the process behind the musical through our central question.
What role does history play in the storytelling of Six, a show that uses the history mix as a device?
We hope you enjoy this episode.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFF's creator Shana Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFF's The Original New Musical from Shana Taub is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Hi, my name's Lucy Moss, and I am a theater writer and director, and I am one of the writers and one of the directors on Six the Musical.
Hi, I'm Toby Marlowe. I am a writer and a performer in the industry, and I'm one of the writers of Six the Musical, along with Lucy Moss.
Amazing. Welcome. It's such a pleasure to have you guys here. Thank you for, I know the time difference is a little wonky, but thank you for hopping on with us today. You're actually our second two-person episode, if you will. So usually we record with one person, but you're our second, but our first writing duo. So I know we're very excited to chat all about your process. We love writing duos. We know that you both wrote Six while at university. I was curious as to if the piece was commissioned for the Edinburgh Festival or was it an assignment with school? I know it was connected to a musical theater society, I believe.
It was the Cambridge University Musical Theatre Society, also known as CUMTS, with an M in the middle there. So they wanted to take an original musical to the Edinburgh Fringe because in previous years they'd taken like pre-existing ones and like, you know, rights was expensive and, you know, there was lots of like keen beans in our time at uni who like did lots of writing, and so they were like, it'd be a good idea to take an original musical to the Fringe. And so they kind of open applications of like any idea. You just had to like apply as a writer to write it with an idea. And that's what I did. Yeah.
Oh wow. So you didn't even have to have like a rough draft or a finished draft. You could just pitch your thought. That's awesome.
Yeah, I didn't even pitch with the idea of Six. I pitched with kind of like four prong like criteria for the kind of show that I wanted to do, which was basically one that had a famous subject matter, because it was like, you know, the Fringe, lots and lots of shows. You want to have something that's going to stand out, something that played around with the form a bit, something that used pop music because, you know, that was like the music we loved to listen to and I liked writing, and then something that had a majority or all female and non-binary cast, because for, you know, several reasons, because we, you know, had loads and loads of friends at uni who were like unbelievably like talented women and non-binary performers who in all the musicals got really like shit parts, because it was like, you know, either like there was a female love interest that was like, oh, I love this man, or like, oh, this man doesn't love me, or like kind of thing, and so we were like, oh, wouldn't it be funny to like write something for them that was really like funny and like showcased all their talents and showcased their humor and charisma, but also it came from conversations that I've been having with my friends Lucy had been having since she was at drama school about how like, you know, female parts in musical theater are like not as interesting or funny or charismatic or as good across the board as the male parts, to be super binary about the whole thing. But yeah, that was kind of like, you know, the impetus of where that came from. And so that was the criteria I applied with, and, you know, other songs I'd written and other ideas and things. And from that, they gave me the gig.
What were the conversations like to actually solidify your topic and picking that point of history and those gals to center a story around, especially because, I mean, we've touched upon this in two of the previous episodes we've done on the Six series, is like we're coming at this from an American perspective, and we'd love to hear what that's like from your perspective in the UK.
It's funny because, like, the choice to do it about the Six Wives of Henry VIII, it didn't come from, like, a love of the Tudors or because we were, like, obsessed with, like, that period of history or those particular women. And, like, even, like, you know, Lucy, like, studied history at uni, but, like, you know, neither of us were, like, huge, like, Tudor buffs and we were obsessed with that group. It was literally because it was, you know, those criteria that I said. I was like, okay, so it's gonna be a famous subject matter and, like, a group of women. What's, like, a famous group of women, either from, like, literature or from history? So I was thinking, like, the witches from Macbeth, like the other female characters from Shakespeare, or, like, you know, the Six Wives of Henry VIII. And then the Musical Theatre Society, which I won't say out loud again, they were like, Toby, like, we need to, like, solidify what it's going to be about because we need to start applying to venues. And I was like, okay, let's just go with, like, Six Wives. But, like, how to do that in an hour at the Fringe with pop music? Like, and that was kind of, like, swirling around. And then one day in, like, a poetry class, I was like, oh gosh, what if it's a pop concert? Because then they can all be pop stars. They can all, like, sing a pop song about their experiences, and that will, like, fit in an hour. And then it'll be, like, a fun form where, like, no one's, like, randomly breaking into song because they're there to sing because they're pop stars. And that could be like the gimmick, and that could be, like, you know, the fun form and the excuse of pop music, and, like, all these, and it all kind of, like, came together in that way. And then it kind of became the process of, like, okay, I've boldly decided that the Six Wives of Henry VIII would be a good topic for a musical, like, better, like, you know. And then I'd like rang Lucy and I was like, what do you think of this idea?
And Lucy, what did you originally think of the idea?
I thought that it had the potential to be really, really bad, like really lame, and just like be a total disaster. But I also, you know, love the pop music thing. And as Toby said, like, it was sort of I guess to sort of answer a question from before about, like, the difference with the American perspective, like, in the UK, like, the Six Wives of Henry VIII are, like, the most famous group of women in history, really. Like, they're the most famous out of copyright group that there are. Like, and it's something everybody learns for multiple years at school when you're growing up. So, like, I was sort of like, okay, like, it makes sense as, like, them being these, like, pop star figures, like the most famous ladies of their day. But yeah, I was literally like, this could be a total disaster if we don't make it funny, basically.
And it's not even like, oh, like this one queen from history that, you know, the famous one, but what about this one you don't know much about who didn't get their turn of the limelight? It's like the Six Wives of Henry VIII. And, like, when we did our, like, GCSEs, which I feel is like the SATs, like, when we were like everyone studied them, and everyone knows Divorce, Beheaded, Died, Divorce, Beheaded, Survived.
To sort of also speak to something from earlier, as well as us being like, oh, we want to, like, write parts for women in musical theatre, this was, like, a time when it was 2017, it was, like, 6 months before the Me Too movement, like, broke. It was a time when we were really talking about, I was studying history, and basically every week I was writing, like, a feminist version of, like, revisionist history of, like, questioning what the, like, prevailing narratives are. And Toby, I know you were doing that in your English literature degree as well. Like, that was such a, like, hot topic for us, like, in general. And so that was sort of part of the impetus coming into it. But also with the Six Wives, it's like, you learn it at quite a young age, you don't really learn it in depth. You learn essentially the most patriarchal version of this history, and, like, and so to us, like, the show is kind of written as if there's a narrative that the audience already knows, and then it's written to sort of challenge that, even though technically everyone's forgotten most of what they learn at school about it. So there's sort of a thing where, like, in the show we do this bit that leads up to Anne Boleyn's song, which is all like, oh, the one you've been waiting for, the mystery, the one who changed history, the temptress, and sort of like repeating back to the audience what they supposedly quote unquote know already. And similarly with, like, Catherine Howard, like, she's known as the sort of like sexy one, the one who slept around. And in order to, like, question that, we sort of have to frame it as like, this is what you already know about them. So it was very much about playing with what the kind of prevailing narrative was, whilst also trying to write it in a way that meant that the audience didn't actually have to know anything. It's sort of more like there'll be a bit where it's like tried to elope and the Pope said nope, and they'll be like, oh yeah, that was what was Anne Boleyn was famous for or whatever. Like,
so from a writing standpoint, so was this the first time that the two of you had collaborated on a musical theater piece?
It was the first time that we'd written together, because we kind of became friends at uni through doing theater stuff together. We actually became friends because I went up to Lucy after I'd watched a play that she directed in our like first couple of weeks of uni, and I went up to her like afterwards. I was like, you don't know who I am, but I just watched that play and I thought it was the best thing I've ever seen in my whole entire life. You're an amazing director. And then soon after that, of course, of my networking, Lucy directed me as an actor in a play. And then the main thing we kind of did together after that was in our second year, which was like the pantomime, which I wrote original songs for, and Lucy assistant directed and choreographed dances to those numbers. I think that's where our, like, mutual talent crush kind of was solidified, because like the work that Lucy did on those songs, it was like, I was like, I couldn't believe it was like a student production. I was like, this is the most like unbelievable choreography. It's so like smart and funny, and it's making the song sound better. And oh my God, like, how is this person like my age? What, a year older than me? It's like, what a difference a year makes, guys, honestly. But I was like, wow, that's like so, so cool. Yeah, which is why when it came to like choosing a collaborator for this, I was like, I know you haven't written before, but I feel like the way that you choreograph and the way that you, and Lucy had like directed so much like new writing as well. And just like, has like, I just felt like should be really a great person to write with.
We've seen that you guys have said in past interviews that there are certain pop artists that you would associate the Queens with. Now, were those, so for example, we wrote a couple of them down. So for Aragon, Beyonce, J-Lo, Shakira, right? Are those pop artists, were those solidified as ideas for each of the Queens originally in kind of like a storyboarding way in your process? Or did that come after you've written the songs and then said, you know what, this sounds like this, we're going to lean into that?
I think it was a tool that we used to decide like what kind of song we wanted to write for each queen. And it was like, it was more sort of dramaturgical, I suppose. So for example, with Catherine of Aragon, because she's got this really long, sad story, there was a world in which like as a character, she could have been a sort of like power ballad, like Adele kind of moment, could have been the Jane Seymour person. But we were really like, okay, you know, Catherine of Aragon is the first queen. We're going to basically do this sort of revisionist history version of like a feminist history story. The first thing that everyone's kind of expecting or that sets the bar is a sort of like, you know, sit down, shut up, Henry, I'm going to tell you what to do. Great. So we'll use that bit of her story. And then the song should be, you know, the classic girl power, run the world, Beyonce, Shakira, J-Lo song to set the tone in that way. Great, cool. And then it was like with Anne Boleyn, we were like, oh, everybody knows her as this thing. Wouldn't it be fun to like approach the history as like revising it and making it like she wasn't calculating and manipulative. She was actually just like having a bit of a joke. Okay, so what's the kind of, what kind of character would that be? Oh, a bit like Lily Allen, a bit like Miley Cyrus kind of, okay, great. So that's the kind of song that would be. So it kind of came about based on what bit of the history we wanted to sort of attack, or based on what we thought like dramaturgically would fit, e.g. the third one, we were like, great, that's where the ballad comes. So then we'll do the sad one, and that's why she'll be like Adele or whatever, or like Emily Sandé or whoever it is. Does that make sense?
That's so interesting. Yeah, because it's like you're almost playing with the structure of what story you wanted to tell in terms of like, you know, the arcs of actual like the story, and then use the artists that we know to kind of make those points land along the plot.
Totally. And I think also we just knew that we wanted it to be like, you know, these six amazing like pop star women. So we wanted them to be like a cross section of like what you understand as sort of like the best divas of pop kind of thing. I think it's like we knew that we wanted variety in that. And musically, we wanted like the songs to all stand alone and be different, you know, as if they could be pop songs in and of their own right. So it'd be a bit weird if they all did a Beyonce song, you know, or they all did Crazy in Love.
But what's kind of cool is that like, because a lot of like the genres of the songs were dictated by like the personalities of the real life pop stars that were like huge at the time of writing. And even like since then, like if we were to write six now, maybe like the pop star references for like the different personalities would be like, would be different because of like, you know, who's in the top 40 compared to 4 years ago, 4 or 5 years ago. But what's really cool is that every time there's like a new production of six now, in the directing process, the cast are really like encouraged to like draw upon like what pop stars they think would be like a really good influence for like the character approach that they want to do. And so what's cool is that we have people now who are like doing like a Billie Eilish-y kind of Berlin or like a Lizzo-y kind of Cleves, when like these are two women that like I hadn't heard of when we were like writing the show. And so it's like cool that it kind of like hits like refresh every time there's a new production now.
So when Brian and I first saw the production on Broadway, we saw it a few days before March 12th. And I didn't know anything about the show. I hadn't listened to the music beforehand, which sometimes I really prefer because then you just go in totally open-minded. And immediately I was like identifying these women who I had not really known well or at all in some cases. And I was like, yes, I can see who she is. I can see like her character fully developed with, you know, by the end of the first number for sure, based on kind of the pop star essence that they were kind of that they were delivering on stage. And it made it very relatable to me. And that's one of the things that we talked with Brittany Mack last week about, or last episode about, was that she was able to, even though it originated across the pond, and that obviously now this is in the States, that she was able to really dive into Cleves and really make it her own, even though obviously Cleves was a real person and was portrayed on stage by another actor and several actors before her. But she said she loved that process of like the rehearsal and like diving into the character and like really nitpicking certain things. So it's cool that you're saying that like Lizzo and other TikTok people were involved.
Yeah. Oh, and she's so good. She's amazing.
Yeah, she's amazing.
Both Lizzo and Brett.
So question while we're talking about Brittany for a second. So she mentioned that House of Holbein, that song appears randomly, you know, it can appear randomly in the cast album when you're not familiar with the flow of the show. But then once you see it on stage, it completely ties everything together. And as soon as she said that, I was like, all the pieces just kind of fit in with me. And I was like, yes, like that's so true. Because I obviously listened to the cast album after I had seen the production, so my perspective wasn't like that. And then obviously once she said that, I was like, I'm going through like all of the research of like who this guy was and finding out that he did portraits on all of the women. And so how did he kind of fit in with your development process or your writing process to the show?
I think we were originally, when we first sat down to plan it, we had a kind of thing where there was going to be like little interludes like between each number, and like maybe we were sort of thinking like maybe they'll play like, you know, maybe Berlin will play herself, but also will like multi-role as Elizabeth at some point. And like, you know, maybe they'll take on these things. And then Hans Holbein was just like one of the characters that we were like obsessed with and thought would be really fun as a sort of like camp German fashionista, basically. And also I was studying, like very in-depth studying his work as part of my degree. So I was like kind of obsessed with him and like knew a bit about him. And then it's the sort of thing where like, as we realized that like we didn't want the multi-rolling, and like, you know, this is before like Henry was even in the story, you know, was even decided to not be on stage. Like when we realized we wanted them to be themselves, whatever, we also then again structurally were like, we do sort of need a group number in the middle. And we'd had this like House of Holbein idea as like how we were going to introduce Anna of Cleves, but also, you know, like a card game that was going to introduce like whoever. And I guess to a certain extent in the show, the one you've been waiting for, Introduction to Anne Boleyn, is sort of like still a relic of that kind of idea. But basically, as we realized we didn't want loads of like interludes that weren't like, that were in different roles, Hans Holbein just never really died out. And yeah, we just dramaturgically were like, oh, we think it would be, you know, we've been three people, we've got this sort of like lull after the half zone, how do we like kick it up a notch or like change the direction completely and like make it kind of like fun and tie all together. So it was basically just like us like holding on to this old idea and not being able to let go of it, but also, yeah, just being like, oh, we need a group number. And then when we were writing it, we then decided, we were like, okay, well, like how can we make this sort of about like a central thesis that like sort of the reflecting the central thesis of the show. And so we kind of were like, okay, well, why don't we make it about like, you know, the lyrics about like body image and about like the expectations on women historically and today and like all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how it came about.
And we wrote it during the rehearsal process of the student production. Like it wasn't there when they were rehearsing it. And then it was like, oh shit, we need like a number in the middle.
Yeah, and I literally like wrote it. And then I think I woke up at like 5 a.m. to like choreograph it and then teach it to everybody that day.
Love those stories.
Lucy, I'm wondering, like, as a director, how do you balance the image of the original women from the history with that of the show that you've written and created and are now directing? Is there like a definitive decision that needs to be made with each of the queens when you're sitting down and figuring out how you're going to direct it versus writing?
What's interesting, I think what's helpful for us is that because, again, it didn't come from a place of us wanting to really accurately like portray these women's lives, and like obviously it came from a place of us wanting to be like as writers, us wanting to like retell history from a feminist perspective, but it wasn't like these six women are so hard done by. Like, it was like kind of like they're sort of a metaphor for all women. And essentially, when we were writing, we were very clear that what we wanted to do was talk about the like the feminist like experience today and what women and non-binary people essentially go through on a daily basis today. So basically that sort of central thesis has always put the actual like, quote unquote, like accuracy or like whatever in terms of like trying to like authentically recreate those actual original queens in such a backseat, because it's really not about them. Like, they are essentially like six of the most privileged white women in history. And like, it's not actually about like those specific individuals having their stories reclaimed. It's sort of about what it is about them, but also about what they represent. So in terms of like directorially, I'm not really interested in like trying to like be true to who those people were so much as I'm interested in being true to what a feminist story is, what is relevant to people's experience today, and to those individual performers, what they can bring in themselves. So essentially, like when we're casting and when we're directing, as Toby mentioned, with the kind of like having their own queenspirations, having them bringing themselves to it, like it's so important that they're basically using the story as a vessel for their own experiences, in the same way that when we were writing it, like what we essentially did was like go through their you know, the story beats of their lives and go, what feels resonant today? What bit of my life can I relate to? Oh yeah, this time that somebody decided I was really manipulative essentially because I'm a lady rather than when they wouldn't have treated a man like that. Great, let's make that part of Anne Boleyn's story. So it's sort of about that process, applying the kind of the same central thesis we place in the writing to the directorial process.
And now, what was the process like for both of you once you started to get commercial interest in the show? How did that really shift things for you guys in both a creative standpoint and then just in terms of business now at that point, and like just the interest from commercial producers and bringing on other creative team members? And because it you know, I would assume in my festival experience, like it's this very like tight knit. I'm not sure how many of you guys were involved in the original inception of it, how small your creative team was. But once you start bringing in more people, I'm sure that really like changes things and levels everything up in a way.
It was definitely a shift. And it was, you know, I guess like a fairly rocky transition from going from doing this student production to the production that it is now. And, you know, that went through several processes of, you know, we're doing this like showcase production in between. That was kind of like a halfway house where we had like some of the team from The Fringe, but some people that were going to be in the production that it is now. And also like that was, you know, a transition of Lucy like becoming the director as well.
So I had read that you guys were hoping that, you know, maybe like a big fancy director would come by and see you guys at the festival or at the Fringe, but then you had a bunch of producers come through and request some meetings. Is that true?
I don't think we were ever hoping for a big director to come and say, we weren't hoping for anything. We just thought that, we were hoping that like one person at least per day would buy a ticket, so there'd be a reason to do that. But I think
right.
We really weren't expecting anything, but I think when producers started coming to see it and it became clear that it was maybe going to have a future life. Again, like all we were really hoping for at that point was like, oh wow, we might be able to do it for a week at a pub theater in London. Wouldn't that be amazing? And then it sort of, you know, became clear that we were being offered sort of more dramatic and exciting things than that.
I mean, because I know you just said that the process was a little rocky getting it from where it was to where it is now. And like, not to go like too far into the rockiness, but I'm just wondering, because I'm sure a lot of people don't realize what happens on the back end when a show is developing. What were some of the things that you you didn't expect now are part of the process of bringing something to a commercial production and taking it out of the festival's orbit. You know, like I think about now getting representation for yourselves. Was that something that you had to establish now? I'm sure speaking with like any kind of representation, lawyers, writing.
We knew literally nothing about how the industry worked. We knew genuinely nothing. And like, and because Lucy said we were going into the Fringe as like a fun summer project with our friends, like, and Lucy wasn't there. Lucy was in Cambridge directing a different show. And so I was kind of there, and like people would come up to me after the show and be like, hi, like I own a theater, or like, hi, I'm a commercial producer, or like, hi, I work in licensing. Can we have a meeting? And I was like, I don't know the difference between any of those things. And then like, I remember because at this point I already knew George Stiles, the composer, because he'd been in like a band with my dad at school. And so I'd done my work experience with him like a couple of years earlier. And I messaged him, be like, hey, like all these people are like asking for like meetings and for all these things. I don't understand anything. And he was like, don't sign anything. Just be polite. Say you'll meet up with them at some point after the Fringe. I'll come see it when it's back in Cambridge and I'll give you my thoughts. But basically, yeah. But then once we did start getting commercial interest after we'd done the end of the student run, we just like knew nothing about what any of it meant. But then Andy and Wendy Barnes, who are two of the producers currently as if they're going to leave the project scene, I reckon they're probably a bit bored. But like, no, yeah, but they're two of the producers, and we like went to their office for them to be like, you know, pitch themselves as producers to us. And we were like, we don't know what producers are. What is theater in, what is commercial theater? And they spent like an hour just like detailing us like how the structure of commercial theater works, what producers are, what royalties are, what blah, 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 blah is. That was like the most unbelievably helpful thing. And they were like, even if you don't go with us, like this is how theater works. And I was like, oh God, if like every person that like wants to go into theater, like have this talking to, it'd be so helpful, because it really like demystified a lot of the things that we were stressed about. And then yeah, in terms of representation, we actually got a lawyer before we got agents, because it was you know, when we had this interest from these commercial producers and they were like, hey, we want to like do a professional showcase of your show in this West End theater in a couple of months, we were like, wow, that's great. And then they're like, here's a contract, and we were like, what? Like, what are you talking about? But then like we understood that like having like, you know, an agent is like a big decision, and it's someone that like is gonna like, you know, you want to be someone, it wants to be like the right person you have a really good like connection with, someone that you trust, someone that gets you artistically. And we didn't want to like rush into that decision. We also like had these contracts that we needed signed. So then George, the composer, was like, oh well, like why don't my lawyer have a look over them, because I really trust him. Shout out to John Cohen, our fabulous lawyer. And then we met him, and he was like the loveliest person in the whole entire world. And like, literally, like he was like, oh yeah, these all look good. And we're like, and then we like went away and like read the contract, like from page to page, which I can't say I've ever done since. But and he was just like, and we like went through like every single paragraph. We're like, so what does this bit mean? Like subsection clause 2A point I, like, what does that mean, John? Like, what's a royalty pool? And then like, he really like,
huh? I still don't know.
I don't know what a royalty pool is. But yeah, and then he really like took us through that, and that was really, really helpful. And then from there is when we met our agents, Alistair and Helen.
Just like hearing you guys talk about this, just like you said, it's so interesting to especially for our listeners to be able to like demystify this process in a little bit, because you know, we only see certain things on the outside, and it's like those things on the back end are so interesting, and it's so
and
a
so
part
important
of the process
and so important.
Like, yeah,
there's so much red tape and so many fine lines to
smash. I think that like the main thing that like I like would say I like learned from that time, or like what the main like change was, is that like before I'd really thought of what we were doing as like amateur theater for fun that is like non-professional. And then I'd seen like professional theater as this like completely separate, completely like above everything else. Like I was like, we've just been doing, you know, we'd basically been putting on like you know, I feel like I've been involved in, like, you know, on average 6 to 8 productions a term at university, like directing, doing all, basically working like a theatre person full time, essentially. And then I sort of thought that we knew nothing compared to everybody in the professional world. The professional world was completely different and on this whole other level. And that, and then I think that what I sort of like realized through the process of going through this workshop, which was like slightly more upscale, and then doing a tour and then doing all the stuff, is that it's all the same. Like, and I really wish that at that time I treated the amateur theatre world that I was in with the respect of the professional world, and also that I'd treated the professional world with the like lack of respect that I have for the amateur, not the lack of respect. Do you know what I mean? I wish I'd like realized that actually you should treat them both with a similar amount of like casualness, but also seriousness. Do you know what I mean? I just really put them in different places. Mm. And that's kind of where a lot of the problems came from, was like us not, me personally, not understanding that just, you know, just because something's quote unquote professional doesn't mean it, like the previous thing wasn't worth, you know, hasn't got as much, if not more worth than that. Do you know what I mean? It was just, that's sort of the mistake I feel like I personally made, and hopefully won't again.
I mean, I'm not a writer. I work with a producer and a writer, and I know that the relationship between the two, especially like early on in the development process, needs to be, you know, tight, because there's a lot of you know, a lot of collaboration involved, a lot of discussions that are being had and choices that are being made. And so I'm curious as to how you both, as you were meeting with producers, and you have several producers now who have joined the project, between all being, even Australia, I'm assuming too now, because I just read that this morning. How did you guys know when the producer, was it really just a feeling that this producer felt right for the project? Because like you said, you weren't necessarily actively like looking for a commercial producer. They were coming to you. So you kind of had that luxury of like just meeting with a bunch of people and like getting to know a bunch of producers. So I'm curious as to how you landed on the core group that you did.
Yeah, I think, as you said, like it did feel right. And like, it wasn't like we met with like loads and loads and loads and loads and loads. There was like, it was just like, there was Andy and Wendy, who they came like really, really early on at the Fringe to come see it. And they really, it really felt like they liked the piece a lot. And they really like, and they work in like, at the time, their main thing was Perfect Pitch, which was like developing new musicals. But when they saw Six, they were like, we don't want to do this as Perfect Pitch because we don't think it needs developing. We think it's close to like a finished product. We want to like produce it commercially. And then we met Kenny, because George, the composer who I'd known, came to see it, and he was like, I'm going to send Kenny, who is someone who I really think is great and who I trust, to come see it. And then Kenny came to see it like the next day or 2 days later. And you know, a few days after that, he was like, I really like it, and I want to, I trust it enough, and I trust you enough to put on a professional showcase in like 8 weeks' time in a commercial theatre in London. And it was just like, I know the way that they spoke about the show, and like other producers that we'd spoken to were like, wanted to like change it a lot or like mold it into something different. And like, they were like, oh, it needs like a backstory, or it needs like an interval, or it needs like double the amount of songs. Whereas those, the ones that we're now with, were really like it needs some adjustments, but we like trust the material. And they really wanted to like put us in a position of like control over it as well. It made us feel like respected, I guess.
Yeah. Totally.
What was something that maybe you didn't know about Broadway, that maybe it was like the first question you had for the producers about what the Broadway run was going to be like? And I know that it came so far down the line, kind of like, it just like the way that we talked with Kevin about it, it was after so many things, it just happened.
I think for me, it's the backstage world is so different in terms of like the unions and like the fact that you can't touch a prop if, but like there's so many rules, and like it's this entire like sort of language that everybody but you speaks. I think in terms of like the show itself, because we'd done it so many times, and because we'd literally, you know, this was our cast that we'd worked with for months from Chicago, like I don't think that I was particularly like oh, we should change stuff, or like, you know, like worried about like basically like Broadway is the opportunity to kind of like realize a lot of the changes we wanted to make, or like production, like, you know, bells and whistles that we'd kind of always wanted to do but hadn't necessarily had the time or budget to do. But like, so for me, it wasn't like I wasn't really feeling like uneasy about the show or like something to do with that, or whether it was going to work or not. I sort of felt quite confident about that, touch wood. But I think that the it's the fact that everybody, like, there's a sort of like house minimums for the amount of musicians that you can have, and there's, you know, everybody backstage like works in that theater, and in the UK that's really not how it works. And also like there's so many like the rules with like, you know, even like tea breaks and timings and all that kind of stuff that just is completely different, that like it was really great that we had such a brilliant PSM, Bonnie, working on it, who really like held our hands through all of that, because it was so scary.
Amazing. So you had mentioned that you had either realized changes or that you wanted to make, or you had a few changes to make for the Broadway production. But were there other changes that you guys were holding on to for the Broadway production to make? Or was it really just kind of see, once we got into the room with the cast and the creative team, to see kind of what came about essentially through the rehearsal process?
It's more like when you're putting up a replica production and you've got like a certain amount of time to get everything done, get everything up, blah, blah, blah. Not the whole team is there and everything. And then you watch it and you go through the previews and it's always a battle against time. And there were so many things. The changes were mostly like directorial in terms of like design and stuff like that, and sort of more like elevations as opposed to like changes. But in terms of like the writing, it was like, there'd be like a bit of it where essentially, spoilers for the show, Catherine Parr, like, quote unquote, like stops the show and then like changes the plan for how it usually is. And before Broadway, it was like sort of in this halfway house. We hadn't fully like committed to that really. It just felt like, so there's a bit where she like starts a song and then she's like, I'm not going to sing my song this evening. And everyone's like, oh my gosh. But like the intro of that song didn't feel like it actually, you know, it didn't actually feel like the beginning of one of all the other numbers. It was obvious that it wasn't real. So essentially, like, the rewrites that we did sort of were like about just like repacing and like committing to that. And it came about from, not from like being in the room being like, oh, let's try this, but from like watching processes where you're sitting in the audience and every night you're like, that's not quite right. Oh, there's something that I don't like that. All of our rewrites essentially happened from like enduring bad writing for a long time whilst watching a version of the show and then being like, how can we fix that? And then it, like, over time us discussing and be like, oh yeah, so next time we do it, let's fix that bit. Then we fix that bit and then we'd watch it all and be like, that bit's just not quite right, or whatever it is. So yeah, it was more like we sort of knew what we wanted to address before we went into the room with Broadway.
And I'm sure it's been a lot of fun and a part of the process of getting to watch all these different productions in such a short period of time. I mean, 4 or 5 years doesn't feel like a short period of time, but having multiple productions kind of stacked and stuff, I'm sure you've been able to see different perspectives and have been able to make some changes accordingly, which is pretty cool.
What are some things that you guys are both looking forward to about the next steps? And maybe what are some dreams of yours for the production moving forward? Because it's so interesting, because I do want to just say, like, at least here in America, everybody always says like Broadway is like the dream. So like, you guys made it to Broadway. What is like the dream from here?
To finish something else. To finish another show. I mean, because like literally as a bored everyone to death with by saying, repeating so many times, that when we wrote Six, it wasn't meant to be anything more than a student production at the Fringe. And so kind of like when a producer was like, I want to do a professional showcase of your work in a West End theater, that was kind of like, oh my God, this is like beyond any dream I could have ever had for my career. This is like ridiculous. This is unbelievable. We're like, our show is going to be like on in the West End. What the hell? And because I'm like, since then, with like everything with the album, it going to like all these other countries, it going to America, going to Broadway, it's kind of like our like dream for the show was kind of like maxed out when it went to the West End, and everything like beyond then has been like just like increasingly and exceedingly like unbelievable and incomprehensible and amazing. And so I kind of feel like, speaking for myself, but hopefully for both of us as well, that like the next part of our, you know, career and journey that we're looking forward to is like obviously like, you know, Six opening on Broadway and like having our opening night and doing that and it being there and us being in New York and having that moment that we haven't really, that we missed out on because of COVID. But then after that, like starting from scratch of like putting on like our next show, you know, and like with all the knowledge and experience that we've had from doing six for the last 4 years, because we've been running around for 4 years being like, oh yes, like, you know, we're writers, but we wrote the show in 2017 and did some tweaks since then, but like I'm looking forward to, you know, kind of like, and over the past year, you know, we've been being writers and we've been doing writing, and I'm really looking forward to the journey ahead of like putting on something else, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know, other glamorous things that will come with six, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Down the line.
I won't be
honest. Lucy, how about for you?
I won't release an album where she covers all of the songs. That's what I want.
Yeah, Beyonce performs six.
Let's put that right out there in the universe. I mean, let's start it now.
The sequel, Lucy, to the telephone video.
Anything that you're looking forward to?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to when Beyonce records her covers of Six album. Yeah, obviously looking forward to Broadway and just like our whole company, like performers and everyone, just like not even really. I mean, obviously the opening is going to be so good and amazing, but then like, after that, when they're like doing it week by week and we have our like alternates going on and blah, you know, all that kind of stuff, that's just going to be the like day-to-day running of it. I'm just really excited for them to have that, because in the UK we've been fortunate enough to have like a few bursts here and there where people can have work, and then now they're all up and running, and it's so great to see the companies like that. So yeah, I think just like seeing them in their day-to-day running, I think also something that I'm looking forward to in the future is, I feel like making sure, I think this is something that me and Toby were talking about the other day, and in fact this is something that really Toby's been brings to the table a lot, is about the fact that with our casting, we always are very like, we really want to encourage like trans people and non-binary people to come be in the show, but so far the professional version, I don't, unless I'm speaking, well, as far as I'm aware, the professional version hasn't had a trans woman or a non-binary person like in a kind of like paid role in that way. And I feel like I'm really excited for us being more committed to making that happen and opening the space as much as possible, and not just being like, it's open to you, woohoo, come and find it, but really like reaching out to find people and invite them into the space.
Yeah, that's really exciting. I look forward to seeing the show with those actors.
Yeah. And the other thing I'd say as well, just going off what Lisa was saying before, was that the Broadway company are just so, so, so good.
Are we getting a cast album?
Oh my God, dot, 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 Brian, dot, dot,
fingers
dot.
Crossed, fingers crossed.
But like, fingers crossed. But like, I'm honestly, we got a month of previews of, you know, New York audiences seeing them. I'm just so excited for the world to see them and to see the Broadway production, because it's like, it's
wild. I mean, if you look at the advanced sales, at the advanced sales of a lot of the Broadway shows right now as they reopen in the fall, like you guys have a lot of sold out dates, and like I haven't seen that. Yes, I haven't seen that.
That's
in because I'm crazy and I look at that stuff. I like look at you know, whatever. But you guys have literal blacked out sold out dates, which is like an anomaly apparently right now moving forward into the fall. So people are so excited to see Six, and that's just so exciting for you guys and your whole company. We always end our episodes, Mary, is it okay if I go into the lightning round?
Yeah.
Right, so we always end our episodes with a lightning round. So it's no, there's no pressure.
You don't want Ross Geller.
No pressure. You don't have to speed through them. It's just like we're not going to really elaborate or respond. So Let's establish an order. So Lucy and then Toby for all the questions, just so we know what we're doing here.
You're putting Lucy right on the spot.
We're both answering all of them.
Right. So what is one thing in the theater industry that confuses you?
Tea breaks.
Mine is royalty pools.
What are three adjectives that describe your ideal working environment?
Fun, supportive, communicative.
Oh my God. Fun as well, like inclusive, and like fair.
Sure. Is there something in your process that you find unique to you as an artist that you like to bring with you on each, you know, show that you work on?
I say the phrase, but why, about 400 times a day.
Always questioning.
My unstoppable banter.
Uh, Okay, what is one job in the theater industry that you would trade jobs with for 1 week?
Costume designer.
One of the queens of sex.
And you did, didn't you? You did that.
I did, but only for two shows. I'd do the whole goddamn week if I could.
Ooh. You could play all of them in rotation for that week.
Yeah. Are there bootlegs of that? I want to see.
There are.
There are. What is one hobby that you both have outside of the theater industry?
Kayaking.
We have not had that answer before.
Doing my makeup.
Do you have any books or any resources that you have found helpful to you as you've made your way through over the last 4 or 5 years?
Ooh, yes. The Royal Court does a writer's podcast, or did a writer's podcast that Simon Stevens was hosting. And that's very interesting, just hearing playwrights talking about their process and stuff like someone was like, I do all my meetings on one day so they're not distracted for the rest of the week. And then we sort of did that, you know, stuff like that. Tips and tricks from the Royal Court Playwrights podcast.
Honestly, the thing that, like, it's not like a book or a podcast, but just like the thing that I have found most helpful is like talking to other writers about their process, and especially writing partners. And any time that we've done like a writing retreat, sorry, it's not lightning round, is it? The first writing retreat, but just like communicating with other writers and like forming like networks with other writers is, it just really helps me and us, I think.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so that makes sense. And then our final question is, what is your favorite part about the development process of a new show?
Playing a friend, the feeling you get when you're really excited to play one of your songs to a friend and you're just like, so we wrote this song today, and you're just like desperate for them to be like, oh, can I hear it? And then like when you play it to them, or when you're like, I'm really nervous about whether this is going to go well, and you play someone a song and they like really respond in the way that you've hoped and dreamed. That's the best.
As Lucy said, that moment when like we're writing something and then like the spark happens and you're like, oh my God. And you just like get it out and you can't stop and you're laughing and you're working on it. And then you're like, getting really excited about something that you're writing. And as you said, you're like, oh my God, I just like can't wait to play this to a friend, for the world to see this. Really good moment. Love that. But that's my favorite one. But to do one that's different to Lucy's, I love a sits probe. Or I think in America, maybe you call it a Vondel probe.
No, sits probe, yeah.
Yeah. And like, just like the first time you hear that all come together in any show, that's always really fun. And also I think like, we used to do this thing on Six of like the first day of rehearsals when like I'd go in and like sing the show, like before the album came out, but I'd like sing the show at the piano to like the cast. And like, or just like the moment when like, in any show that I've done where like the people who are going to be performing the material hear the material for the first time and are getting all excited about it, and then you're kind of like visualizing them doing it as they're hearing it for the first time, that's always quite like an electric moment. Really fun vibe with that.
Amazing.
Well, thank you both for joining us. Where can our listeners find you guys on social if they want to hear more, learn more?
I'm at Moosey Loss, so it's like Lucy Moss, but you switch the M and the L around, you know, on like Twitter and Instagram and stuff. I think I'm Mrs. Moosey Loss on TikTok because there's a fake version of myself because I didn't get in there quick enough. So,
and I'm at Six the Musical. I'm at the Toby Marlowe, which I have regretted ever since I made, but. Yeah, at the Toby Marlowe, if you want to check me out.
Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you both so much, and especially for like enduring all of the technical issues that we've had during this episode. For any listeners, we've been kicked on and off like multiple times, but it's cool. We made it through, and I'm going to have
fun editing this. It'll be a seamless edit.
Thank you both so much, and you know, wishing you guys the best with your Broadway debut.
Thank you so much.
I hope to see you there. Woo!
Thanks everyone for listening to this episode of Page to Stage. To keep up with us, you can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Page to Stage Podcast.
If you enjoyed this conversation, we have other episodes with theater makers from Six the Musical.
Check them out.
Until next time.
That's Brian.
That's Mary.
We'll see you later.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway, and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.